Guys, welcome to another episode of Tariq Radio. I am your gracious host. My name is Tariq Nasheed. Glad to have everybody tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to chop up game as we always do. Let everybody know that we're live right now, ladies and gentlemen. Let everybody know that we are tuned in, tapped in, and ready to chop it up like we do every week. Hit that like button and hit that subscribe button, ladies and gentlemen. Hit that like button and hit that subscribe button. And what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick commercial break while we're waiting on everybody to pile on in the room. So you don't move a muscle, ladies and gentlemen. We will be right back right here on Tariq Radio. Don't you move a muscle.
Listen up, squares. You need to get the legendary book on game. The Art of Mackin' by author Tariq King Flex Nasheed. Available on Amazon right now. Can you dig it? This book has been a bestseller for 20 years, Jack. And the New York Times called it a classic. That means it's out of sight. So this book ain't for no lames who ain't trying to learn the game. Jive turkeys. So if you're ready to stop slacking in your Mackin', get the Art of Mackin' book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble right now, sucker. Rated PG. That stands for plenty of game, jive chumps.
Have you been feeding your skin quality ingredients? Are you dealing with any type of skin condition such as eczema, hyperpigmentation, body acne, or discoloration? Here at Joy House Essentials, our triple whip shea butter is 100% handmade and whipped to perfection, guaranteeing results you will see and feel instantly. Give your skin the nourishment it deserves and stop using harmful, chemical-based products today. You can find us at www.thejoyhouseshop.net or give us a follow on Instagram at @JHEshop. Joy House Essentials, let's elevate together.
What's up, family? You guys need to check out this cookie company out of Houston, Texas called The Cookie Confidant. Man, they sell these beautiful, delicious, huge cookies right out of Houston, Texas, man. And the brother has been in business since 2017. And I've tried these cookies, man. They are bomb, bomb, bomb. Very delicious. My personal favorite are the chocolate chip pecan cookies, man. They are bomb. Y'all need to go to cookieconfidant.com. to get these cookies. Black-owned company, man. They got chocolate chip peanut butter cookies, white chocolate cookies with sprinkles, man. So anything you like in a cookie, they got it. So again, go to cookieconfidant.com. That's cookieconfidant.com. Family, are you tired of not getting the credit you deserve at work? Are you fed up with office politics? Are you being sabotaged by coworkers? Do you wish there was a way to solve problems in the workplace? Well, if so, look no further than the new book, A Black Man's Guide to Working in Corporate America by our brother Ken Woods. It's a comprehensive guide on how to navigate through the workplace, and it provides suggestions, strategies, and other ways to solve problems that you might encounter. A Black Man's Guide to Working in Corporate America, available right now on Amazon. Get your copy right now.
Bro, stop playing and start spraying. Leave an op on the ground where you stand. At all costs, yeah, make sure you protect it. Old goon juice, the formula been tested. You can defend yourself if you find that you need a little help. Gotta stay ready, ain't no love in the street. Pepper spray straight to the face, make them get weak. Get it at oldgoonjuice.com. If they thinking you slipping, then tell them to come get them some. If you packing this, you won't be lacking. A shot to the eye in them problems you having. Maximum strip, hit them haters on ground. So you can feel free when you out in the town. Old goon juice, and don't forget a shirt, man. You gotta stay ready, that evil on lurk. Yeah.
Okay. You are now tuned into the legendary OG. Tariq Nasheed.
I want to apologize to all my friends.
On Tariq Radio.
Where is Tariq getting all this cash?
Oh, we're back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We are back. Glad to have y'all tuning in. Glad to have you guys tuning in. How you guys doing this week? Hope you guys are having a productive week so far, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here. I'm on time this week. You know, I'm supposed to do the shows on Wednesday, and sometimes I do them on Thursday, I do them on Friday, but I'm on time this week, so I am proud of myself, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here on this lovely Wednesday afternoon. Everybody pile on in the room. I need everybody to pile on in the room. Yeah, we got to talk about Don Lemonade a little bit. Don Lemon Pepper Wings. We got to talk about our boy Don. We got to talk about him. But anyway, before we get into that, I need you guys to do me a favor. I need you to scroll down and you see that share button. Need you to hit that share button and share this on your Twitter feed. Share this on your Twitter feed and then share it on your Facebook feed. Ladies and gentlemen, share that. You dig? And where are my LA people? Where are all my LA people? All my Los Angeles people understand tonight at the wonderful historic Hidden History Museum, we're having Tariq's Comedy Vibe. We're going to have comedians up tonight. We're going to be lounging at the museum. We're going to have a great time tonight. If you are in LA, y'all need to come on through 2131 West Jefferson Boulevard starting at 7 p.m. tonight out here in Los Angeles. You can hit the link, hiddenhistorymuseum.com, for more information. But it's going down tonight. So if you are in LA, y'all need to come on through. We're going to have a great time tonight here at the Hidden History Museum. Come on through, ladies and gentlemen. Where are my LA people? If you're in LA, let's put a, I would say put a W up. Put a W up for West Side. All my LA people, put a W up if you're in the chat room. Put a W up. All my LA people, we want to see you in the house tonight. All right. But listen, y'all want to see my face? Somebody's like, we want to see Tariq's face. We want to see Tariq. All right. Well, look, I'll get on camera for you guys. I'll do that. Boom. Here I am. I get on camera for you guys. Y'all wanted to see me? Well, damn it. Here I am. But listen, let's get into what we're talking about. A lot of stuff we got to get on tonight. Don Lemon. Your boy Don Lemon. They finally fired Don Lemon. And Don Lemon was shocked that he was fired. Don Lemon, he said this took him by surprise. This just came out of left field. Oh, they didn't have the decency to fire him in person. He had to learn through his agent. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Hold on one second. Hold on. Sorry about that, guys. Just some people getting in on the guest list tonight. But yeah, but look, Don Lemonade, he was shocked that the situation kind of came out of left field for Don. Don was like, wow, you know, I didn't see this coming. I've been down for 17 years. Whoop-de-whoop. Listen, we knew Don Lemon was going to get fired. We knew that. We knew Don Lemon was going to get fired. We knew that was coming. Listen, as our good brother Professor Black Truth says, look, the white supremacists, they break their tools. They always break their tools when they're done with them. And I don't like to celebrate the demise. And I won't say too much of a demise. He just lost his job. I think Don will, I think he'll be good. He should be able to get another job. John, he was a good anchor. But Don, every now and then, he hopped on the coon train. And every now and then, he hopped on the coon train. And we've called him out. We remember when we had the coon train meme? We had Don Lemon on there. He would get up there and get around Zaddy and kind of say these little slick things about black society. Yo, we've called him out for that. But then he's going to be good. But this is a lesson. What's the lesson here? Black people, you better understand that you being buck broken does not save you from the ramifications of systematic anti-black racism. See, a lot of black people, black males, they've been fooled into believing I just throw a little pussy juice around and I'm going to be all right. I'll sit here with white mommy, white daddy, and I'm going to be the non-threatening moist dude. So I'm in there. I got it figured out. I'll just be the eunuch. And the eunuch, they've always had leeway into the reins of power for these people. No, you don't. No, you don't. You're going to learn a valuable lesson here. You dig? Just because you want to be the courtroom eunuch and you want to lay up with Zaddy, that doesn't save you. Just because you think you're going to trade in your manhood for some sense of comfort doesn't work like that. You better understand that you claiming to be a part of the LGBT community, you better understand how systematic white supremacy dominates that as well. Y'all really need to watch the movie that we did called Buck Breaking. The movie Buck Breaking touches on that. The white LGBT community, they are just as racist as the so-called straight hetero society. Just as racist. And their racism is just as vile. If you look at history, some of the most vile anti-black racism has come from the white LGBT people. And most of that violence has had sexual undertones to them. Ever since the Europeans who believed in white supremacy started interacting with the non-white people, they immediately began not just sexually exploiting the women, they sexually exploited the men. When we look at history, and I really want y'all to study the movie Buck Breaking, we go so deep in that movie. That's why that movie was so successful. We went very deep talking about them. They were doing this stuff to each other in European society. If you look up Greco-Roman society, I mean, man, do y'all know the stuff they were doing to each other? Even now, when you go to places like Greece, and, you know, me and my lady, we went to Greece a few years ago, they have little artifacts and monuments that shows and depicts their ancient culture. Even now, they show a lot of the perversion that they were getting into. They show that now over there in Greece. You go to Greece and you go to a coffee shop and you'll see some ancient depictions of dudes bending each other over on a coffee mug. It's like wide open. They've just accepted that as a part of their history. Yeah? You better understand that part of the game. So this is what they were doing to each other. So now when they interacted with the non-white people, they doubled down on it because there was no familiar connection. There was no bloodline connection. So they could do as they pleased. And a part of dominating people, when you dominate, especially a man, you dominate a man sexually, the psychological ramifications of that is important. Because if you can dominate a man sexually, you've already dominated him mentally. So you have neutralized the warrior threat. That's why when these dudes rape dudes, they call it taking their manhood. When a dude is dominated and raped sexually, a lot of these dudes won't have that fight in them. Yeah. Look at some of their the heroes in the dominant society. Look at some of their historic heroes. Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was out there bussy collecting all over the place. Alexander the Great had a hankering for bussy. Caligula, people like that, big old freak. They were into all types of stuff, man. So that mindset of dominating a man sexually, there's a psychological ramification to that. And then what happens is a lot of men, black men, who get dominated by these white supremacists, you try to rationalize your domination. You try to rationalize it as a win. A lot of times when people lose, they try to flip it as a win. you think, well, damn it, yeah, I'm sexually dominated, but I'm in there. I didn't figure out a way to get my foot in the dough and a seat at the table with Massa. So I'm close to Massa now. So I got all types of jobs that these other straight black folks can't get. I got access to these meetings that they don't have access to. So now you think because they've let you in, because now you're non-threatening, you're not going to procreate, because the threat is always black procreation. The threat is always about black procreation. I really want y'all to watch it, Buck Breaking, so we can break this down for you. I'm just giving you the cliff notes of it. So you think, well, I'm not going to procreate. I'm not going to chase these white women. Zaddy got me. You understand that Zaddy, even though he's going to dominate you sexually, he's still going to put you in your place as a Negro. He's still going to remind you, you are a subordinate. And what happens is y'all get comfortable around Zaddy, and then you start thinking that you're equal within his society. So every now and then they have to make an example out of some of you to let you know, hey, you're my buck broken Negro token eunuch, but just understand, you better know your place. You better know your place. Don't get too uppity. And sometimes they thought Don Lemon, he got a little uppity with the white women up there. Because Don Lemon, a lot of these dudes who are buck broken, they think that they are de facto white women. They think that they're going to take the place of the white women. So the white women get behind closed doors. Michael, what are you going to do about that sassy Negro at the office mouthing at me? You see? See, Don Lemonade and a lot of the queens, see, they get around the white women and start kind of read the white women and all that. And you better understand that white woman, that's his mama. That's his sister. That's the white supremacist mama, the white supremacist sister, the white supremacist daughter, the white supremacist wife, for real, for real. So she's going to be in the bedroom letting her grievances be known. You do something about those Negroes. He's getting a little uppity. Yeah, I know you tear his little bussy up every now and then, but hell, you still let him know his place. If you want me to maintain this white supremacist system, see, the system of white supremacy is based on everybody being on code and benefiting from that system somehow. Everybody who's classified as white, they have to benefit from that system. The white women, what am I getting with this? You dig? The white women are like, what am I going to get out of this? How am I going to benefit as a white woman maintaining this system? So they have to let the white women know, okay, white women, if these Negroes get a little sassy with you, we'll smack them around. If they run up on you, we'll get them in order. We'll check them. We have certain job positions that we're going to guarantee you're going to get. We have certain benefits and set asides for you white women. If you commit a crime, we're not going to treat you like the Negro women. So there are benefits to systematic white supremacy. There's benefits. So the people in the dominant society, they have to see where the benefits are going to come in. So if you let a black person get too uppity, the white women are going to complain, and some of the white men are going to complain. And that's the thing that happened with Don Lemon. He got a little too uppity. And again, with Don Lemon, they've had him on for 17 years, and you know they got all the mileage they're going to get out of him, because what they need now, they got to get a new crop. You see, they got to get a new crop of bootlicks and Sambos and moist shills. They got to get a whole new crop of them. You see, and a lot of the shills who's been around for a long time, they start making demands. Notice when these shills get older, they start cycling them out. Like Jesse Lee Peterson, they done outed him. Some of the white men that he was kicking it with, they started putting all of his bussy business out there in the streets, saying that, he'd been running up in men for years, and they're just putting all of his business out there. Because they've had enough of him. They've milked him for everything they can milk him for. And you better understand how the white supremacists think. They don't trust the bootlicks. They know that they can get mileage out of them, but they don't respect the bootlicks. When they see a dude who will sit up here and denigrate black society for them, they'll accept it. They'll even paper you up. But in the back of their mind, they're like, I don't respect this dude. If he'll turn on his own community, yeah, he might eventually turn on us at one point. So we're going to get him out of here sooner or later and get us another crop of Negroes. So you better understand, with the white supremacists, it's all business. It's all business. They're business people. You dig? They are business people, and I get it, and I have no problem with it. They're business people. We got a lot of folks in here right now. Let's get about 7,000 people in here. Retweet this and reshare this. Retweet it and reshare it, because we're going to get deep tonight. We better understand that these people are about business, and they will turn on you. We think that they're turning on us, but they've always had that disdain. These folks never really liked Don Lemon. They just like what Don Lemon can do for them, which was hide some of their white supremacist agendas, which was push some of the Democrat agendas, the LGBT stuff. So he checked off a lot of things that's on their agenda list. He's black, LGBT, minority, or whatever. So yeah, you can cover a lot of grounds with the Don Lemon, and he'll toe the company line. They like that. But they understand after a while, this guy might, he's been here for a long time, so they'll, and he might get a little too comfortable, start making more demands, start asking for a raise, and, you know, he's been here for a long time, he think he's in there, and then they'll turn on you. You dig? And let me say this. We think that working with those in the dominant society, helping them build their economy, helping them build their corporations. And Don Lemon, he's a very good anchor. Let's be clear. Don Lemon is a good anchor. Don Lemon is a good anchor. He's very good. We think giving these people years of service, they're going to turn around and congratulate us and be appreciative of what we've done. Let me tell you something. Nothing can be further from the truth. We can save these folks and they'll turn around on us and throw us under the bus. And by the way, Tucker Carlson, I know he's been fired. I have to do a whole different show about that because that's a whole different thing. Right now we're going to focus on Don Lemon. But understand, we better understand, we can sit here and literally save these people. You better understand how white supremacy works. We've saved them during slavery. Look, when they, and I've said this many times, when they tried to build their own colonies, they failed. We actually saved these white supremacists. They're not appreciative of that at all. We've saved them several times in many industries. They're not appreciative. Our good brother Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby saved NBC. Do y'all understand what I'm saying? In the 80s, NBC was about to fall off. Y'all, I want y'all to understand, in the 80s, NBC was falling off heavily. The Cosby Show saved NBC. A lot of you guys are kind of young. Y'all don't really know the impact of the Cosby Show in the 80s. The Cosby Show was the biggest thing on television. It saved NBC. Let's even go back. Universal Pictures, Universal Movies, during the 1960s, when they had the Fair Housing Act and all of that in 1968, which was a result of the riots that were going on in the country after Dr. King was killed, there was a major white flight movement. Yeah? Yes, somebody, let's get on that. Somebody made a good point. I'm going to get back on Universal. But Universal and many of the movie studios, because of white flight, white people after the 1968 riots, white people were leaving the inner cities and going to the newly developed suburbs. They were fleeing from the cities. So then you had all of these empty movie theaters. The movie industry started to tank. Late 60s, early 70s, the movie industry was tanking because of white flight. Why? White people were moving out to suburbs, and the suburbs didn't have movie theaters yet. The suburbs did not have these Metroplex theaters. They didn't have them yet. So now there was a void. So you had good brothers like one of my mentors, Melvin Van Peebles, and others. They created the Blaxploitation movement. And movies like Shaft, the industry had to jump on that wave. They had to jump on our wave. So they made the movie Shaft. The movie Shaft saved MGM. Yeah, that black movie Shaft, because they said we gotta do something. What are we doing? We're gonna have to auction off all of our stuff. MGM, they did The Wizard of Oz. They were auctioning off stuff from The Wizard of Oz to make money. It was that bad. They were selling costumes from certain movies in order to damn keep the lights on. It was bad for these industries. But they saw the money that our brother Melvin made independently. This brother scraped together a movie. And by the way, it was Bill Cosby who helped fund the movie Sweet Sweetback. Our brother Melvin Van Peebles did a movie called Sweet Sweetback. And it was Cosby who was one of the people who helped fund that, by the way. And it was the black grassroots. The Black Panthers made it required viewing. So that movie made like $10 million, which was a grip. And the budget was a few hundred thousand. They scraped the money together. So the industry, they were like, oh, damn, what are we doing? You know what? That's what we need to do, because now you have these empty theaters. Black folks are going to these theaters now. So now all of these empty theaters that's in the inner city, we're using them up. And then they started sending those cheap kung fu movies over from Asia. And we flocked to see those. So we funded and made those kung fu movies hot, and then the Blaxploitation wave came, and we saved these Hollywood studios. You understand? And then after we saved them and we built these studios back up, they completely ignored the black audience after around 1975, when they started getting their big money back up from Blaxploitation movies. They got those Blaxploitation dollars and started making Jaws. They started making Close Encounters of the Third Kind. They started making Star Wars movies. And then by the mid-70s, they had these Metroplex theaters in the suburbs now. So white families were starting to go back to the movies around 75. So they were like, F those Negroes. Yeah? We've always saved people, and then they turn on us. Marvel Studios, one of the first Marvel comic movies that had a big budget was a movie called Howard the Duck in the late 80s. It was one of the biggest flops in movie history. Marvel tried their hand at movies, and one of the movies they did was a character. Howard the Duck is a Marvel character. They did Howard the Duck. I want y'all to look this up. Howard the Duck damn near bankrupted Marvel. That was a huge failure. It was like one of the major, major failures in movie history. That movie failed so bad, it was infamously a failure. So Marvel was in the tank. Yes, that movie flopped. Major. It's one of Google the biggest flops in Hollywood. That'll probably come up. Let me Google that right now. That might just come up. Hold on. What were the biggest flops? Let me see if it comes up. Let me see if Howard the Duck comes up. Okay, there's a few movies that come up. Pan, let me see. 10 biggest box office bombs. Mars Need Mom. Okay, let me see. So they got some other movies on here. They got some other movies. So I guess some other movies might have topped it. Let me see. But Howard the Duck was what was the biggest flop of the 80s? Heaven's Gate. Okay. Biggest flops. I'm looking at it now, but I remember Howard the Duck was a huge flop. Hold on. And that was from Marvel. Howard the Duck was a total flop. Why the original Howard the Duck movie famous flop? Okay, let me see this right here. Let me show y'all this right here. I'm showing y'all some of this stuff here. Where we at? Okay, Fabulous Flop, How Howard the Duck Changed Hollywood. So it's talking about how that movie flopped. It was not well received. Howard the Duck cost $37 million to make. Okay, hold on. And just earned $16 million, leaving George Lucas in debt, having spent $50 million to build his ranch. So, yeah, that movie flopped majorly. Okay. Okay. So they talk about Howard the Duck being a flop. But that was a flop for Marvel. That was a Marvel character. Yeah. Now, the Marvel character that was successful, y'all already know what it is. Y'all don't even know what it is. The first Marvel character movie that was successful was Blade, our brother Wesley Snipes. The Blade movie, that was a success for Marvel. That was Marvel's first success. Yeah? The Punisher was the last Marvel movie before Blade, but yeah. When Blade came out, Blade saved the Marvel film franchise. Marvel saved that. Yeah? No, it wasn't Spawn. It was Marvel being saved by Blade. Blade got everything popping. Yeah? Blade got things popping. Blade was a sleeper hit. They did not expect Blade to take off the way it did. Isn't Spawn DC Comics? Is Spawn Marvel or DC? Hold on, because people are saying Spawn. Hold on, let me see something. Where are my comic book heads? Hold on. Is Spawn Marvel or is it DC? And I know my brother Michael Jai White was in Spawn. Is that DC or Marvel? Hold on. Wait a minute, hold on, because let me look that up. Okay, it sold all the rights to Marvel. So which one is it? So Marvel, which one is Spawn? I mean, which comic franchise is that? Okay, so I can't find which one it is. I don't know if it's DC or Marvel. It's Image Comics. Okay. Neither one. Okay. It's Image Comics. Okay, that's something else. Oh, it's ex-Marvel writers. Okay. Okay, but the point is, when Blade came out, that was a huge success. And what did they do to Wesley? Wesley ended up having to go to court against Universal because they were jerking him around with his money. They were jerking him around in his franchise. They made him a co-star in his own franchise. They start bringing the white characters up to the forefront, and Blade became a damn sidekick. Who does that? Yeah? Who in the world does that? So, of course, Wesley had a problem with that. And then when he started making noise about, hey, man, this franchise that I helped really get popping and help build, I mean, we need to do right. Let's do good business with this. Yeah, Wesley was going to court with Universal. Do y'all remember that? Yeah, they were jerking him around with the Blade franchise. Yeah, Blade saved Marvel, not Spawn. No, it wasn't Spawn. But yeah, when Blade 3 came around, Wesley was a co-star in the movie. Like, what the hell is this? How you mess up a franchise? If it ain't broke, you don't fix it. They put Ryan Reynolds was basically the star of like Blade 3. They made a white man the star. When have they ever done that before? When have they ever done that? A franchise making hundreds of millions of dollars. It's doing great. And then you get the main star and make him a sidekick. This is how important white supremacy is to these people, to maintain it. They cannot fathom the idea. Okay, yeah, a black hero saved our franchise, but thank you, Negro. Too bad, so sad. We're still trying to maintain white supremacy here. Yeah? No, but I didn't want to see no Ryan Reynolds. Yeah? Then all of a sudden, he got the tax evasion laws. They hit him with the tax evasion, and they were talking about he's funding a military branch down in Atlanta. Oh, there's a lot of stuff they threw at Wesley that y'all don't remember. They were making Wesley out to be some kind of militant leader. They were like, yeah, he's down there. He has some farmland and a military training facility down there by the Nubians in Georgia. Y'all look that up. How many of y'all remember that? When they were trying to low-key tie Wesley in with Dr. York down there in Georgia. Y'all remember that? Some of y'all might not remember that. I remember all of that stuff. They were trying to kind of low-key tie him in with the Nubians that were down there in Georgia. It was crazy. They were throwing all the stuff, and then they were getting these bogus for paternity charges on him. They had random women talking about he got him pregnant, and they were trying to make him take these paternity tests. He's like, hey, I don't even know these people. I don't want to get drug into court with some people I don't even know, and I got to take paternity tests for any fool who says that I knocked him up and I don't even know him. They were doing a lot of stuff to him. They were throwing the kitchen sink at our brother Wesley. A lot of folks don't remember all that. Y'all just remember the tax evasion thing they threw at him. But they were throwing a whole bunch of paternity stuff at him. They were doing it, my brother, dirty. They were doing him real dirty, man. You dig? Yeah, and Jennifer Lopez. And that's, boy, them white Latinas, boy, they start sounding like Karens after a while. Boy, they start sounding like Rosie Perez, Jennifer Lopez. When they're on set with brothers, they always got some narrative that the brothers almost tried to rape them and all that stuff. Jennifer Lopez was, Wesley was coming on to me. Jennifer Lopez was on that. Rosie Perez was on that with Do the Right Thing. Yeah, he was rubbing my breasts and he was getting off on me. And Rosie Perez has done other scenes with white men that was damn near softcore pornography. But I digress. Yeah? But the point is, we're going back to what we're talking about, Don Lemon, and black folks thinking that you're in there when you help build up things within their structure. They're never appreciative of it. So we got to get out of that mindset of being comfortable thinking that they're going to owe us one, because they know they owe. They know that. This is why they got to throw you under the bus. They know that we help build up their institutions. That's why they have to throw us under the bus, because the name of the game is to never give us what we're owed. You dig? So you better always keep that in mind. You better always keep that in mind. That's why I started doing my movies independently, because I would go, when I started doing my books, when I first started writing my books, The Art of Mackin, all that stuff, and you guys should have The Art of Mackin if you don't have it. You need to get The Art of Mackin if you don't have it. That was my first big bestseller. And then that spawned off a whole new industry, that pickup artist industry. That came from my book, The Art of Mackin. So a lot of the major publishers, they jumped on the bandwagon. They saw the sales that I was doing, and they said, okay, we're going to do similar books like yours. So the major booksellers, or the publishing companies rather, they would come to me, and I got a couple of major book deals. If y'all look at my books after The Art of Mackin, my next book was on Simon & Schuster. That's one of the biggest publishers in the world. It was a book called Player Be Played. I started getting calls from publishers left and right, and I did unprecedented deals at the time. See, what publishers would do, when they see an author, they'll give them a book deal, and you got to do like 3 or 4 books with one publishing company, okay? You got to do a whole bunch of books with one publishing company. But I had book deals with a couple of publishing companies. I had a book deal with Simon & Schuster, with Player Be Played, and then the very next book that I came out with was The Mac Within. That was with Penguin Books. So I was getting checks from these people left and right. I was getting big money from these people, which was unprecedented, because they saw the damn books I was selling without them. You think they're out of Mac, and that book sold 250,000 copies independently, just on the streets. So when they saw the book sales, the television network started hitting me up. I was on television all over the place, and they would have me on all of these shows. And I'm talking about, they were trying to give me a show on NBC. That's why when, if y'all remember that old footage of me on Conan, I was on Conan a few times. I was on The Tonight Show. NBC had me on all of these shows because we were working to do a show like the Carson Daly. If y'all remember, is Carson Daly? He's not on the air no more. But they wanted me to do like a late night show, kind of like a Carson Daly. So we were kind of getting prepped for that. And also I was doing a bunch of stuff with MTV. Oh, I was doing just a bunch of stuff with that. And I would go to these meetings and I would give these people some game and give them my ideas about different types of shows. And then what would happen was these folks would start coming up with shows like I would tell them, but then they would put a white person in it. I'm like, whoa. So I would go in these meetings and start talking about the show ideas and we should do this, we should do that. And then they'll go do the exact same thing and go get some random white person to be in the spot. I'll say, okay, let me keep my mouth shut. And also, I see how cutthroat and ungrateful these people are, because I'm giving them the game and they're putting up these shows. And not only am I not even getting credit for it, not getting paid for it, not even getting acknowledgement for it. I said, okay, this is like some street shit. Okay, cool. So what I started doing, I started going in these meetings and going into these networks, and I started learning what they were doing in there. I started learning the positions of the people in there, the editors, the directors, the people who do grip and lighting. I started studying them. I started to find out who their camera people were. I started to find out who their editors were. You think? I started finding out who the sound design people were. Yeah, I stopped telling them my ideas. I had to say, that's another thing. I got to stop talking to these people and giving them your damn ideas. That's a major thing. Because they'd butter you up. Hey, Tariq, we got to do this. We got to do that. What ideas do you have? We can do this. And I'm like kind of falling into it. They're like, and I'm giving them the game. And then they flip it and then give it to somebody else. I said, okay, well, let me go in here and start eye hustling. So what does that guy do? Well, he does editing. He does this. He does that. Okay, cool. What does she do? Well, she's the director. She does this. And what does that guy do? He works the camera. Okay. I start looking at the people, learning their names. And then what happened when I started doing my movies, I started getting their people. I started getting their editors. I started getting their color coded people, the people who do the color correction and people who do the sound design. I started getting all the people in Hollywood to work on my movies. I started getting their people. So that's why when we started doing the Hidden Colors series, that took off, because I had the connections with the people in Hollywood who works on mainstream stuff. And the movies progressively got better and better and better. That's because I started using the people in Hollywood. I'm going to use these people on my stuff, because a lot of times when we do black projects, people think we'll do the bare minimum. You get your homeboy to go get a camera, then y'all film something. No. We're going to make this thing polished. I'm going to do this thing Hollywood style. I'm going to make Hollywood style movies, but make it with black empowerment. Yeah. That's why the Hidden Colors films took off the way they did. That's why Buck Breaking and all of those things. When Buck Breaking came out, that was the number one movie on Amazon, not a documentary, not black movie. I want y'all to understand, when Buck Breaking came out, that was the number one movie on Amazon out of all movies for like a month. Yeah. The quality was comparative of that from the Hollywood movies. Yeah. And that makes a difference. So I'm using, instead of using my expertise and my skills to give it to people who are basically ungrateful and they're just going to give me peanuts anyway, they're going to give me crumbs. Damn that, I'm going to get the whole cake. You dig? I'm going to get the whole damn cake. So now, instead of going through them, letting them give you a lot of mainstream publicity and giving you just a percentage of the paper, I'm going to get grassroots publicity, do the same sales numbers, and then we keep 100% of the profits. Yeah? Because the thing is, they need us anyway to get the grassroots support. You got to understand that. They need us in order to legitimize things anyway on a grassroots level. So we have to understand our worth. See, I understand our worth as a black community. I understand how they need us. See, black folks got this thing where we think we got to get in with the dominant society. If white folks don't like it, it ain't legit. You better understand the value of your community and the value of the grassroots. See, we got taught that the grassroots audience is a chitlin circuit. And the chitlin circuit is bad. The money is still green, dude. The money is still green. And if you can serve your community in a way that empowers them, that's even better. You see? So we got to understand the game out here. But again, with Don Lemon, the lesson in that is, you're never 100% secure in a system of white supremacy. You're never 100% secure with them. You never know what they're going to do. They can pull the plug on you at any time, ladies and gentlemen. They can pull that plug on you. And Don Lemon learned the hard way. And let me tell you something. Don Lemon was on his broadcast with this East Indian guy. And Don Lemon was kind of, I think a lot of people said this is the reason why they got rid of Don Lemon, because he was going in on this East Indian guy who was kind of denigrating black society. So Don was kind of blacking it up a little bit. Let's play that clip of Don Lemon going in on this guy. Well, kind of going back and forth with the guy. Hold on 1 second. So Vivek Ramaswamy, what's his name? Ramaswamy. So this guy, this is an East Indian guy. He goes around using these anti-black talking points. Now listen to this. Hold on.
With due respect, I find your explanation reductive and actually insulting, including to black Americans, to say that black people today, compared to 1964, 1865, haven't made progress in part because of the freedoms we secured. And the Second Amendment was black part people, of
the... Hang on, please. I cannot keep a thought if you guys are talking to me in my ear. So hang on 1 second. So to say that black people, say what you said again.
Black people secured their freedoms after the Civil War is a historical fact, Don. Just study it. Only after their Second Amendment rights were secured.
Okay, hold on. Let's deal with that BS. Okay, let's deal with that BS for a minute. Even before I get to Don Lemon's answer. Okay. These are right-wing talking points. So what they do, they love to get non-white people to spew these jive-ass talking points. That's a damn lie. We didn't secure our freedoms after the damn because our Second Amendment rights were secured. What kind of garbage is that? That's horse crap. We didn't get our freedoms as black people until our Second Amendment rights. So what? This is that thing where they try to give props to the NRA. They've been trying to push this lie that the NRA actually helped black people get gun rights. So we owe the NRA something. That's horse crap. We know the NRA specifically went against their own gun laws when they saw the Black Panthers and Black people arming themselves in the 1960s. It was the Black Panthers leading the charge on gun control when they saw Black people getting guns. So this whole lie that they love to pull out, they pull this lie out every 3 or 4 years, that the NRA helped Black people after slavery get gun rights, which is horse crap. And that's how we secured our freedom. Black people were terrorized after slavery. And a lot of times we could not own guns. They would take our guns. We couldn't really own guns like that. Some did, some didn't. But they were still, some stores, not selling guns to Black people, even though we were supposed to get equal protection under the law. Hell, family, even now, the way the laws are set up, they make it so that a lot of Black people cannot get guns legally. I'm talking about right now. Right this very minute. Damn what he's talking about. They have these little loopholes that they've created where they'll do a gun check or they'll send your paperwork in. If you go try to get a gun legally and you get your paperwork sent in and they're supposed to do a background check, what they'll do, they'll send something saying, well, your background check was inconclusive, so it's up to the discretion of the gun shop owner to sell you the gun or not based on the inconclusiveness of your background check. This is the game they play. So now the gun store will say, well, since your thing came back, it didn't say you had anything on your record, but it said it was incomplete, so I'm not going to give you the gun. This is the game they play now. I'm telling you, this is the, because look, I work with Black gun shop owners. This is why we work with Black gun shop owners. You dig? Because this is how they let us know this is the game that's being played. Now, a Black gun shop owner would be like, hey, we got you. You get your gun. Shout out to Redstone. But yeah, they'll do that delayed stuff on you, right? They got all types of loopholes. They'll run the delayed game on you. See, we're going to talk about stuff like that at the FBA Expo, by the way. We're going to be talking about that. So, yeah, they still got loopholes to this very day. So they had loopholes back then for us owning guns. Don't let this dude sit up here and tell that lie that we had all these gun freedoms. And No. No, we got our freedom because a lot of Black people were going outside the system to fight against white supremacy. You did? So let me play the rest of this guy. Let me play the rest of him. All right. And his horse crap. All right, let me play this guy. Hold on 1 second. All right. Hold on. Y'all bear with me. All right.
That's not secured their freedoms after the Civil War. That is not. You are discounting Reconstruction. You're discounting a whole host of things that happened after the Civil War when it comes to African Americans, including the whole reason that the Civil Rights Movement happened is because Black people did not secure their freedoms after the Civil War, and that things turned around. People were tried to change.
Which is true. Don Lemon is telling the truth right here.
The freedoms that were supposed to
happen. And you know how they got it? They got their Second Amendment rights, and they actually got, the NRA played a big role in that. But today,
that's a lie.
Hey, Don, the
NRA did not play a big role in that.
Actually, they trained Black Americans how to use firearms.
That's a lie. That's not. The NRA did not play a big role.
This is just historical fact.
It's not historical fact.
The part that I find,
because you say it's historical fact,
the part that I find insulting is when you say today Black Americans don't have those rights after we have gone through civil rights.
And this is an East Indian talking about after we have gone. We, you speaking a lot of French, my G. We, you mean flee? The we is us. You fled. Your family fled over here. What's all this we talk?
You are sitting here telling an African American about the rights and what you find insulting about the way I live, the skin I live in every day.
Here's where you and I have
the freedoms that Black and white, that Black people don't have in this country, and that Black people do have.
Well, here's where you and I have a different point of view. I think we should be able to express our views regardless of the color of our skin. We should have this debate without me regarding you as a Black man, but me regarding you as a fellow citizen.
And you're sitting here, whatever ethnicity you are, explaining to me
whatever ethnicity
about what it's like to be Black.
Whatever ethnicity I am, I'll tell you what I am. I'm an Indian American. I'm proud of it. But I think we should have this debate. Black, white, doesn't matter.
I think we should have this
on
debate.
On the content of the ideas.
Do it, you should do it in an honest way and in a fair way. And what you're doing is not an honest and fair way. Okay? We appreciate you coming on.
With due respect, Don, I look forward to continuing that conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look at the white woman sitting there.
We'll talk about China.
Yes, let's talk about China.
Next time you come back.
Oh, thank you. Much to say, I'm declaring independence from China.
Okay.
Something you can add on.
Okay, so this is one of these guys. He's another one of these Dinesh D'Souza types. They get these anti-black East Indians who come over here trying to run their fingers in our faces, telling us about black problems when y'all come from the slums of India. Yeah. They come from these slums and then they want to come over here and wag their finger at us. So Don was actually correct on that one. So they're like, oh, well, let's get him out the paint. Yeah, we're going to get him out the paint. Yeah. So we got to check these folks who come in and try to spew this narrative. And what's interesting, there's some other East Indians that were checking that guy. There's some other East Indians were checking this guy. This guy right here, he's like, I reject the toxic idea that you can't engage in a debate with a black man about American history if you're not black. I don't think you actually believe the nonsense either, and you're just saying what you're supposed to. Hold on, what is that? Hold on. Oh, right here, this is the part. This is what I'm looking for. He's like, Don Lemon was right. As an Indian American, I was profoundly embarrassed by Vivek lecturing a black man about black history. The truth is that the black civil rights movement paved the way for the 1965 Immigration Act so that Vivek's family or mine could come to America. We owe a huge debt, which is true. Which is absolutely true. Yeah. These East Indians and these people who come over here waving their finger at us, you know, I'm not cool with that. Not cool with that, and they should be checked. Black folks, y'all got to start checking these folks. Anybody, all these folks talking about what black folks should be doing and black people this and black people that, you're not at liberty to point your finger at us. We're uncheckable by you. If you done fled from somewhere, you can't tell us nothing. If you fled from somewhere, or your family fled, don't tell us nothing. You cannot say anything to us. And you didn't even get your homeland together. You didn't even get things popping where you fled from. You're not going to come here and try to pull rank and tell me what to do or how to do it. Y'all better start letting these folks know what the deal is. Dude, we're different. This is not a nation of immigrants. We are not immigrants. I am not an immigrant, my G. And this dude, Vivek, whatever his name is, we got freedoms and we did this and you speaking a lot of French for somebody who fled, my dude. You didn't do nothing. What's this we talk? Yeah, Don said splaining, real talk. But y'all, this what we did, dude. That's, you mean us. We did all of the fighting and you did all the fleeing. What you talking about? We got these people real comfortable with this minority stuff. Yeah, the immigration disrespect, that has gone on too long. Speaking of immigrants, y'all boy, Praz from the Fugees. Did y'all see that? Praz Mitchell or Michael, however you pronounce his name is, my man Praz from the Fugees. He admitted to being an FBI informant. Uh-oh. Yeah, he's on trial now. Because they're trying to say that he's clicked in with China or something like that. They said he's in some money laundering scheme and an association with a foreign company and attempting to influence the U.S. government. Yeah, they seized $74 million he had across four banks as a result of his alleged involvement in financial crimes connected to the alleged embezzlement of Phnom Pholo. So this Asian guy he was clicked in with allegedly had him funneling money. I don't know what was going on with the money. I'm not going to say this is what they're on trial for. But yeah, they were using Praz to throw this money around and give the money to the Democrats somehow. And Praz was like, hey, wait a minute. Y'all can't throw me under the bus. I've been working as a federal informant. During his testimony, he admitted to working with the FBI as a federal informant, but still claims his innocence. He's like, hey, I'm in there. No, you're not. This goes back to what I'm saying. You just because you're a federal informant don't mean they won't throw you under the bus. He thought, hey, come on, man. I've been cooperating. I've been a rat for you guys for the longest. Y'all throwing me under the bus? Come on. Come on. I've been a rat for you. Yeah, he's Haitian. Praz is Haitian. He's like, I done been a rat for you guys. Come on. You're throwing me under the bus? They're like, that don't mean nothing. Just because you are our rat don't mean you can't get it. Boy, a lot of these folks are down bad thinking that they can get away with a lot of stuff, man, dealing with these people within their system. There's a lot of rats out here. There's a lot of federal informants out here, dude. If they got this dude as a federal informant, just imagine. There's so many informants out here, man. Some of them are more obvious than others. There are a lot of informants out here, man. Just look at the actions of some of these people. Just look at them, especially on YouTube and social media. Just look at the actions. Some of these people might as well wear an FBI jacket. Some of the stuff they do is so damn blatantly Fed stuff. It's, there goes a Fuji reunion. Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. But going back to the theme of us understanding when you build these people up or when you work with people in the dominant society, understand how they can turn on you. And by the way, we got a lot of folks in the room. I want y'all to go to HiddenHistoryMuseum.com. We got 5,000 people in here, a lot of people in here. Go to HiddenHistoryMuseum.com. Join us tonight at the Hidden History Museum. We have the Tariq comedy vibe going on. We got a comedy show tonight at the Hidden History Museum. Y'all need to come on through, pull up. We're going to have a great time tonight, ladies and gentlemen. At the Hidden History Museum. You don't want to miss that. Go to HiddenHistoryMuseum.com. But listen, just because you work with somebody in the dominant society and you make them successful and you make money together, that don't mean anything. Did y'all see what they said about your boy, former coach Phil Jackson? Oh, Phil Jackson, he's been out here talking racist like a mug. Hold on. They got Phil Jackson pointing out his racism. Phil Jackson's anti-BLM screed is no surprise. So Phil Jackson was up here talking about how he stopped liking basketball because of all the BLM protests and the players talking all of this Black Lives Matter talk. He's like, yeah, they had things on their back like justice. And the funny thing happened, like justice just went to the basket and equal opportunity knocked him down. Let me see. Yeah, he didn't like all of the equal opportunity talk from the basketball players. That made him uncomfortable. So Phil Jackson is letting his anti-Black racism be known. And let's be clear. Remember, Phil Jackson has been on that for a long time. That's nothing new. Phil Jackson, if you listen to Phil, has always been on that. See, people give Phil props because he was coaching Jordan. Then he coached the Lakers. He coached some legendary players. But let's be clear. Because his name is associated with Black greatness, we kind of historically has given him a pass. Yes, Phil Jackson, yes. See, y'all got that. We're going to invite this dude to the cookout because, yeah, he was there around Michael Jordan's greatness and all of that. No. Dude, this dude was a good coach for his own benefit. Just because this guy was a good coach don't mean that he was not practicing white supremacy. Yeah, Scottie Pippen's even called him out. Yeah, there's an article that came out a couple of years ago. Let me put that up. Yeah, Scottie Pippen's called him out for his racism. Phil Jackson has kind of bit on that BS. Hold on, where's that Scottie Pippen? Okay, right here. Yeah, this was a couple of years ago. Scottie Pippen's was like, yeah, he accuses Phil Jackson of being racist. Yeah, so Scottie Pippen's, who played for the Bulls in the 90s. Yeah, so Scottie Pippen's called him out. So Phil Jackson's racism, you know, it's been bubbling for a long time. It's been known. But, you know, they've been selling Phil Jackson as white daddy. You know, they've been selling the white daddy to the Negro image of Phil Jackson. And they got a whole bunch of quotes of Phil Jackson's racist comments over the years. Right here. White players are often more willing to run patterns and work collectively. because of the predominance of blacks in pro basketball, the sport is rapidly disintegrating into a one-on-one sport. There are only about five or six teams who play with more than a superficial degree of team unity. So he was like, yeah, black people want to be the star too much. While guards played black basketball, black kids growing up want to be the superstar of the neighborhood. They want to be the toughest kid on the block or the richest. Once they get to the playground, the best one-on-one basketball players. White kids, on the other hand, are usually raised in a more homogenous environment, which provides other outlets for personal expressions. They are also constantly being taught the principle of subordinating their own personal glory for the good of the group. Okay, this is white supremacist talk. Okay? This is white supremacist talk. No, they're not subordinating their own personal glory. No, you need a whole team in order for you guys to shine as a group because you can't do it on your own. Let's tell the truth. Let's tell the truth. And inherently, Phil Jackson knows this. He knows that those in the dominant society, you need a system in order to prop you up, whereas a black person can do their thing as an individual. And if we all get together on code, we're really unstoppable. So they missed me with that, Phil Jackson. That's white supremacist talk. No, just the fact that black folks can shine on their own, he's trying to flip that into a negative and trying to make it seem like, well, yeah, the white players, you know, they have to suppress their glory. They have to downplay their greatness for the good of the whole team. No, they need the whole team in order to prop them up. That's the truth. You understand? This is contempt. Him, Phil Jackson, yeah, you're coaching a Jordan and you're seeing the greatness of that man, knowing that you don't have that. You see, knowing that you don't have that innate greatness of a Jordan. Yeah? That's white fragility. You're a coach around all of these phenomenal black men who can do things on their own. Yeah, that's white-splaining. So yeah, Phil Jackson, these white supremacist suspects, they'll sit around black folks, but they have contempt, especially these coaches. Remember a few weeks ago, there was another sports coach, and they caught him on tape just yelling nigga. He was like Tourette's. He was just yelling the N-word left and right. And he runs some kind of football camp or something, or basketball camp down in Georgia, I think. And they caught this guy yelling the N-word left and right. These folks have contempt, man. They have a secret contempt for the black people that they're around. And remember, it was Phil Jackson who was on that dress code stuff back in the day. Remember? Y'all remember when they were saying that ball players need to have a dress code because they're coming up here looking too thuggish? When ball players started showing up to the games and showing up to the press conferences swagged out, they were like, oh no, because, you know, the white women were choosing too hard. The brothers coming up there with the braids and the chains and the, oh, they were turning the white women on. Y'all remember that? And they were like, hey, y'all gonna have to get a dress code. Y'all Negroes are gonna have to come up here. Y'all gonna have to put a uniform. Y'all got a dress code. You gotta have a dress code. Phil Jackson was at the head of that, by the way. Y'all know that? He was on that stuff. Let me show y'all some articles. He was one of the main people talking about they need a dress code. He's been on that. From dress code to equality. Phil Jackson is exactly who we thought he was. So he's getting called out for all of his stuff. Yeah, he was mad at Iverson. Yeah, Iverson created a whole swag movement, man. That Iverson swag, yeah, they had to suppress that. Iverson coming up there with the braids and the jewelry, so that other kids are like, damn, that shit is fly. Iverson had his own swag going on, so they had to, nah, we can't have that. Yeah, we got to have them looking square like us. Yeah, the Allen Iverson rule. Yeah, brothers were going up there too damn fly, swagged out. Then no, y'all got to look. If we look corny, you're going to have to look corny too. That dress code bullshit was racial all day. They didn't want brothers up there with that swag, influencing other young black kids. Yeah, well, that thug stuff. Stop it. And Phil was one of the main ones on that. Don't forget. Do not forget that. Yeah? Yeah, they have the tattoos and all of that stuff. Real talk. So you better understand, just because this guy, we've associated with Phil Jackson with our greatness. No, this dude has the same mindset as some of these other white supremacists, man. I'm not impressed by this guy. Yeah? So we got to watch that stuff. And speaking of Chicago, did y'all see in these cities, there are these like kind of flash mob things going on? You have all of these groups of people, young folks running around in these urban areas, kind of just in large groups, mobbing down on stores and mobbing down on the mall. And we see a lot of this stuff going on. And some of this stuff seems like it's being orchestrated by those in the dominant society. It looked very suspicious. They had something out here in LA where they were mobbing down on a gas station. You had all of these different mobs of kids running around, running up in stores. It's very interesting that's happening now. That's very interesting that's happening now, ladies and gentlemen. Now that we're talking about reparations, all of a sudden we see these flash mobs popping up all over the place. Very suspicious. And don't think that they don't orchestrate this type of stuff, the dominant society. They'll sit up here and create sock puppet accounts and be like, yeah, hey guys, everybody turn up. We're going to meet up at the Arco station at 5:00. We're going to mob the police might be orchestrating that type of stuff. We never know. But let me tell you something. I saw something very interesting. Yeah, this is like another propaganda piece. Yeah, they allow it. And now that we're talking about reparations, showing mobs of kids running in stores, taking stuff, that goes into this, well, black folks want something for nothing. Black folks are violently trying to get reparations. And this really made me raise my antenna looking at this interview here. They had this woman here talking about these flash mobs. And listen to what she says. Listen to what she says. Now, this really made my antenna go up. They happen to catch this right here. Hold on. Hold on one second. Let me get the audio together. Hold on. Listen to this.
If somebody decides to loot a Gucci or a Macy's or a Nike, because that makes sure that person eats, that makes sure that person has clothes, that's reparations. That is reparations. Anything they want to take it, because these businesses have insurance. They're going to get their money back. My people aren't getting anything.
Dude, when I say shill, this boy, who says that? Who gets on camera and says, yes, us robbing these stores, that's reparations. That they're man, stop it. Stop it. That's some shill that some intelligence agency then sent out there to say that. Who says that robbing a Gucci store is reparations? Who says that? That's horse crap. And she's wearing a mask. Why are you wearing a mask? There's no COVID no more. What are you wearing a mask for? Why are you wearing a mask? That's a plant that they put out there, man. The COVID ain't popping no more. So why you got a mask on? This is a tether plant that they done sent out there. That's agent behavior all day, to get out there. And they went right to this person. They knew who to go to say that nonsense. That's a plant if I've ever seen one. This is what I'm saying. They got these agents all over the place. You dig? Now, you don't know who the person is. You don't know who this person is. Yeah? Ariel Atkins, Black Lives Matter of Chicago. Okay, that's her name. Let me look her up. Ariel Atkins. Hold on. Let me look this person up real quick while I'm looking at it. Hold on one second. Ariel Atkins. Who is this person? Who is Ariel Atkins? Okay, I'm looking this person up. I'm trying to see. I'm looking this person up. I'm trying to see who this person is and what their Instagram or their Black Lives or their Twitter page is. Who is Ariel Atkins? Who is this person? Where is she from? Ariel Atkins. Where is this person from? Back on Twitter. Is this her? Hold on. I'm looking this person. No, this is some ball player. Ariel Atkins. Okay, yeah, I don't find anything on this person. Yeah. Where is this person from? I'm smelling some Bammy. I smell Bammy. I'm smelling some Caribbean vibes. So I want to look this person up. I don't find nothing on this person now. I don't see a Twitter page on this person. But yeah, I smell Bammy. No. A lot of these people are Caribbean. Yeah, a lot of these people are some damn Caribbeans. Let's be clear. A lot of these people are Caribbean. Just stop it. They get these Caribbean. These Caribbeans have names like that. So who is this person? I'm going to see who this person is. I smell some Bammy and oxtails. To even come out there to say some nonsense like that, and you're the so-called organizer. Who is this person? Yeah? But anyway, I digress, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, let me get out of here, man. It's been real. We had a great time today. I think we were very constructive. Don't forget, guys, we're having the event tonight at the Hidden History Museum. Where you at? I want everybody to come on down to the Hidden History Museum tonight, 7 p.m. if you're in Los Angeles, 2131 West Jefferson Boulevard. We're having Tariq's Comedy Vibe. It's a beautiful day out here in L.A. If you're in L.A., y'all need to come on down. Have a good time with us. Chop up game with us, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be doing our thing. Go to HiddenHistoryMuseum.com. HiddenHistoryMuseum.com. And for those who contributed to the museum, if you contributed, we are going to have you on my personal guest list. The link, you should know where to find it. You should know where that RSVP link is, ladies and gentlemen. And you know what? Let me put it up in the chat room for those who contributed to the museum, and you can show proof that you contributed and you're in LA. If you are in LA, if you're here, let me give you guys the link. Let me just throw the link in here. If you are in LA, hold on one second. Let me put the link in here. I'm gonna put it in the chat room. And if you're in LA and you contributed to the museum, you can get in tonight on my complimentary guest list. If I see where the damn room is, where we at? I can't see y'all no more. Hold on one second. I lost you guys. I can't see you. Hold on one second. Let me put this in the chat room real quick right here. Still got a lot of people in here. All right. Let me put this in the chat right here. Shout out to D Tubman. She put it up there right here. If you are in LA, only LA people, if you're in LA, hit this link right here. And if you contributed to the museum already, you can get in tonight on my guest list. Complimentary. All right. If you're in LA, if you're not in LA, don't even worry about it. It's kind of pointless for you to even fill it out. But you're in LA, and if you want to go, you hit this link right here. And come on through. 7 o'clock tonight at the Hidden History Museum. We're going to have a great time tonight. We might have some surprise pop-up guests tonight, so you guys need to come on out and see what's popping. All right? I'm out of here, guys. You guys have a great week. I'll see you guys tonight here in L.A. at the Hidden History Museum. Papi Akute and Lola Vuve to the family. Y'all be good. Peace.